Vincent Nolan is the kind of man most of us don't want our children to be. By the shaved head and tattooed arms, he's a walking poster for hate as a member of the neo-Nazi American resistance movement. But Francine Prose's new novel, A Changed Man, asks us to give Vincent Nolan a chance to change. He walks into the offices of a human rights group called the World Brotherhood Watch, where he confronts founder Meyer Maslow, a Holocaust survivor, and announces, "I want to help you guys save guys like me from becoming guys like me." But is it easier just to go unloathing and looking down on Vincent Nolan from a higher moral plane? That's the story that follows in A Changed Man. Francine Prose joins us here in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
You're surprised by the humor in the novel from the very first page. Colloquial, snappy humor.
Well, that's what made it possible to write, really. I mean, I couldn't have written a serious, grim, reforming neo-Nazi. I mean, the minute I knew, in fact, that Vincent had a sense of humor, as do most of the characters in the novel, that's when I knew I could go ahead and write it.
From the moment he walks into the World Brotherhood Watch offices, the first thought as a reader is, this is a setup. This man cannot be sincere. And in a peculiar way, it's the sense of humor that reassures you maybe something is going on here.
Well, there are the little phrases that run through Vincent's mind. For example, he's walking down the street, and he's feeling incredibly uncomfortable and alienated and scared in New York. And he says that while he's been in the boondocks with his Aryan friends, an alien species has been bred to survive on dog piss and carbon monoxide. And the minute I got that phrase, I thought, I can do this character. I can do this.
I want to get you to read a passage that I must say has already attracted some attention. Now, this is soon after Maswell and Vincent Nolan meet. And Meyer Maslow makes a request of Vincent Nolan. It's a way of kind of comparing bona fides, if you could read that.
Okay, sure. Maslow is speaking. "So, if we are to be colleagues," he says, "do you think that I could make a slightly unusual request?" "What does he mean by unusual?" Nolan's staying in to find out. "Be my guest," says Nolan. "Would you mind pushing up your sleeves?" "Sure." Nolan pushes his sleeves to the elbow, high enough for Maslow and Bonnie to get a good look at the Waffen SS bolts and the death's head. Neither shows the slightest emotion. They could be doctors trained to examine disgusting eruptions. "Thank you, Vincent," says Maslow. Then Maslow rolls up his sleeve, unbuttoning a pearly button and neatly turning his elegant cuff. And there on Maslow's spindly arm is the row of blue numbers. Nolan should have predicted this, but he's shocked nonetheless. He's never seen anything like it. He always knew Raymond was wrong about the Jews tattooing themselves. The holo hoax, Raymond calls it. Maslow's quite a guy. You got to give him credit for having the balls to go mano a mano in this weird game of dueling tattoos. Damn, Nolan's glad he got the tats. They're getting him into the action. At the same time, he's glad he never went for that holo hoax crap. If he had, the old man's tattoos would be making him feel bad about himself instead of about his fellow humans.
That's quite a scene.
Thank you.
The two of them, in a sense, challenging each other and yet forming just the strangest kind of bond. Although, as Maslow says, don't compare our tattoos.
Right.
Yours are self-inflicted, mine were,
right,
were something else. How does a scene like that set up in your mind?
Well, with terror, really. It was a terrifying scene to write. And like so much else in the novel, I thought, can I do this? Can I actually write this? And then I thought, given that I'm trying to write about both of these human beings, and that I myself feel a great deal of respect and compassion for them as human beings, I can probably do it. I can probably get away with it.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about your portrayal of Meyer Maslow, because you put a lot of humor into it. And that's a difficult thing to do with a Holocaust survivor. Chancy. I'm sure there are people who told you, be careful with that. For example, you've got a phrase, I think, one of your characters says, Meyer insists on having it all at once, history, God, and expensive clothes. He demands the right to wear Armani while using a mystical tale from Rabbi Nachman to make a point about the hunger in Rwanda.
Well, you know, as far as I'm concerned, humor is the key to survival. I mean, there was, in fact, humor among the inmates in the camp. There's quite a lot of evidence of that. And it's how people get through. It's how people cope. So using Maslow's own humor and humor about Maslow seems to me not an effort to demean him or demean what he's been through, but really a kind of testament to his humanity and his complexity.
He holds organizes a dinner party for Vincent to essentially announce Vincent's arrival among the liberal elite intelligentsia, who he hopes will take notice and open their pocketbooks and that sort of thing. And early on in that scene, which is hysterical, you find yourself as the reader rooting for the neo-Nazi.
Lord knows I'd been to enough of those benefit dinners, and I'd seen the kind of, you know, and even and especially when they're for really good causes, and mm-hmm. and you believe in the cause, and you're hoping, in fact, that people will give money at this dinner, I am sitting there thinking, I cannot believe what I'm hearing people say around me. I remembered so much from those dinners and just was able to put the tone of them into the novel.
At the heart of the book is your character, Bonnie Kalin, who is the chief fundraiser for the human rights group. And Vincent comes into her home, where she has two teenage boys who, like, I think it's safe to say, most teenage boys all over the world are determined not to be too impressed by the fact that they've got a shave-headed neo-Nazi staying with them.
They're cool. They're cool. Yeah. They're too cool for that. I mean, writing that family and that family scene was for me very much at the heart of the book. I mean, for one thing, Bonnie, c'est moi. I mean, I am the mother of two kids, two boys, in fact. You know, I spent a lot of time with teenage boys, and everything I knew about motherhood and neurotic motherhood went straight into Bonnie. I mean, all her worries and her fears for those kids and the constant second-guessing and wondering if she's a good enough parent, that was easy to write. I mean, it was scarily easy to write. And the boy, Danny, the 16-year-old boy.
Yeah,
I mean,
Danny and Max are the two.
Right,
two sons,
right. He was just a joy for me to write because, you know, as I said, I spent all this time with teenagers, and he is so clear-sighted and has such a crystalline view of what's going on around. I mean, you know, he's a little bit of a slacker and a pothead and so forth, but he's very aware of what's going on, and he sees through so many of the things that are more mystifying to the adult characters. Mm.
The relationship between Bonnie and Vincent is subtle and careful, and it's too easy to leap to the conclusion that there must be some romantic attraction between them, because there's something more enduring, I think, going on.
She sees him at first, and she especially sees her adoption of him, taking him in, as a kind of reclamation project. I mean, she's wanting to be challenged and to be a better person than she is, and to really step up to the plate as a good human being. And she feels that her inviting him to live with her and the kids, that's what it is. And then, you know, what happens all through the book is the characters change one another in ways that no one could have predicted. And I have to say that I couldn't have predicted when I started writing the book. So as he becomes really more and more the kind of decent human being that he is inside, she finds him more and more appealing.
As your story winds towards, I don't even want to refer to it as a resolution, but certainly winds right. towards just where you turn the last page, it suggests that human beings are capable of change, but it's not easy, and it doesn't happen all at once, and there's backsliding.
Sure. But I think it's equally true that human beings are incapable of not changing. I mean, you can't possibly go from cradle to grave as the same person. So you're going to evolve. That's a given. The question is how you evolve, and who helps you and who influences you, and what are the best possible qualities within yourself, and how do those qualities get brought out? And that's what all the characters in the book are trying to figure out, and trying to figure out for one another and for themselves, and also trying to balance their own less attractive qualities with the things that make them decent and good and admirable.
Miss Prose, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Francine Prose, her new novel is A Changed Man.